Today's episode is brought to you by...
Hi, I'm Jeff Goulding and I'm a Liverpool author.
And I'm Kieran Smith, a Liverpool historian.
Together, we've been working on a great new project, which is a book out later this year entitled The Untouchables, Anfield's Band of Brothers.
It's a great story about one of the greatest sides in Liverpool's history, who won back-to-back titles in the 1920s.
Yeah, this is a team that is absolutely packed with incredible characters. Men who fought on the battlefields of Europe in the First World War and returned home to claim two league titles in a row.
And it's due for release in the UK in September. And thanks to our friendship now with the Liverpool Connection podcast, it's also going to be made available through them in the United States at the same time.
Welcome to the Liverpool Connection podcast. I am Daz. I've got Steve with me and this week's special guest, former Liverpool forward and now works for Sky Sports and LFC TV, is Neil Mellor. Hiya, Neil, mate.
Hiya, lads. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, cheers.
You're welcome. Nice and early for us and early for you as well.
Not as early as you guys, yeah, but I think you're a little bit earlier than me.
I love the stuff in the background, by the way. Is that a golden boot?
Yeah, do you know what that is? I don't know if you've ever been to the academy, Kirby Academy, but we've got an indoor arena at the academy. It's called the Ian Frodsham Arena. And what that was a really talented young player coming through at Liverpool, similar time to Steven Gerrard. And sadly, he passed away very young and never got to have a career in the game. So the arena is named after him in his honour. And that is the Young Player of the Year Award, which is called the Ian Frodsham Award. And I think I got that back in 2001, 2002. So that was, there you go. So back then, that meant a lot to receive an award like that.
Yeah, man, that looks nice.
In fact, I'll test you both now. Who would have won the main player of the year award for Liverpool that year? Oh. So I got the young player. Who got the main one? 2001, 2002. So the year after, we just won the treble.
Man, we're supposed to be asking questions.
Come on, just a quick quiz for you. Centre-half, not English, centre-half.
Lord. Centre half for England.
You're asking questions at 5:30 in the morning.
Played in Istanbul. Centre half.
Who PA?
Correct.
Yeah.
My brain clicked.
There we go.
So Neil, you're a Sheffield born lad. And you first wanted to play for Man City, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Correct,
because of your dad. So how'd you wind up at Liverpool then?
Yeah, like you say, I was born in Sheffield. My dad had played for Sheffield Wednesday, and then he moved back to Manchester. And he'd been a player for himself in his career. He played for Man City, and for me, that was something I wanted to do. I wanted to follow in his footsteps. You know, a lot of young boys want to maybe become what their dads did, or maybe they have an inspiration themselves. And that's what it was for me. So I wanted to be a football player, and I wanted to play for Man City because my dad had played there. So that was the reason. And Liverpool, I knew nothing about Liverpool growing up. It was all about Man City to me. But back then, Man City were rubbish. You know, you look at Man City now, and obviously the challenging at the top end of the league, which is when my dad played for Man City, they were challenging as well. But back then, they're in the third division. So equivalent to like a Sunderland, a Portsmouth, and Ipswich now, way off the pace in terms of competing at the top. And so, that was my childhood. I was at the School of Excellence at Man City from the age of 10 all the way through to the age of 16. And then... I actually talk about it in my keynote, talk about the rejection I experienced at the age of 16, being released. Instead of feeling sorry for myself, instead of thinking, moaning, sulking, I carried on playing football. I played for England schoolboys. I scored 5 goals in a game for England, and pretty much every club in the country wanted to sign me. And that was when Liverpool said, do you want to come for a trial? I was like, yeah, absolutely. I want to come for a trial. And so that's where it all started for me at Liverpool.
Yeah, how was it working with Stevie Highway?
Steve Howe was unbelievable. I mean, the fans still sing his name today, don't they? Stevie Howe on the wing. And he was in charge of the academy, and he was honest. He said to me, listen, I'm preparing you for the day you leave this football club. You will leave this football club one day. So I've only just signed for Liverpool. I'm thinking, I can't wait to play for the first team. And he's already telling me I'm going to leave the football club. But what he was telling me was, make the most of the time you have at this football club. And I really, really enjoyed working under Steve, under Hughie McCauley, great coach as well at the academy, and Dave Shannon as well. Now they have a lot of coaches, don't they, at the academy? But back then it was mainly those three.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Stevie and the rest of the coaches, it's not only football, it's like get an education as well, which is something that I don't think, you know, in the 70s and 80s, you know, if a kid didn't make it in football, that was it. You know, they didn't really think too far ahead. While now, you know, they're looked after, you've got to do your schooling. So it prepares them for, you know, whether they make it or not, which I think's great.
Yeah. And I mean, personally, when I'd been released by Man City, I was going to go down the education route because I'd got a scholarship at a senior school that I was at, and they wanted me to go to university. But I was advised by the PFA that unless Man United or Liverpool want to sign you, go down that route of university because you know, you can do well academically. Unfortunately enough, Liverpool came knocking on the door and said, we'll give you a chance.
I'll bring Steve in now.
Anyhow, good morning. How are you?
Morning. Very well.
Good to see you, mate. Hey, you know, we had David Thompson on here recently, and obviously he's another Liverpool player that really had a lot of injuries during his career, got really curtailed a lot early. Not as early as you, obviously. And, you know, much of our conversation was posed on the mental health side of it, of accepting the fact that your career has ended. This, can you want to maybe take us through some of that, your thought processes when you realized that you just couldn't play at the professional level anymore?
Yeah. I mean, how long have we got with injuries? I've got that many injuries to talk about. It all started for me at Liverpool at 16. I had a stress fracture in my lower back, couldn't play football any longer. And it was difficult then because I'm wanting to be a football player, but I'm watching lads go ahead of me in the pecking order because I can't play. I'm not getting noticed. Mm-hmm. So that was a really difficult time, a challenging time. And then I experienced injuries throughout my career. Even, you know, we're going to touch on a few of the goals that I scored for Liverpool. I was injured at the time. I was struggling. And then when eventually my career did end at the age of 29, I was at my best mentally. I was like, oh, I want to get back to where I was. I want to get back to the Premier League. So that was a big shock to me. And again, I talk about that in my keynote, which is about resilience, because we all experience difficult times. We all experience challenges, adversity. But how do we react? What do we believe when that time comes to us? Are we aware of how important our belief needs to be to react? So for me, I did it naturally younger, but at the age of 29, when I had to retire, that was when I focused on what I could do. I didn't feel sorry for myself. I think, right, I can't play football anymore. I thought, right, I was lucky enough to play professional football. I enjoyed that. Now I've got to focus on something else. And that was when I went down the media route. But I've seen loads of friends think about what they can't do. Can't play football anymore. Can't score goals anymore. Can't get the adulation from the fans anymore. And they lose that identity. And that is a really difficult time for a lot of football players.
You know, I mentioned pre-show that you and I, we actually met before in 2015, had the fortunate experience of being able to play in a supporters match. You played. And I think at that time, you're only maybe 32. I remember going up to you during the game and saying, what are you doing here? You know, you look like you're injury free, you're running, you know, but obviously there's a different level to play in that game than play professionally, you know, day after day. But I imagine that you're still the ability to play in that game it brings you good feelings, you know, that you're still able to play. Cause there's some people that are injured that can't really do that anymore.
Yeah, well, I couldn't walk for a month after that game. that's how it is. I play in the garden with my little boy. He's, 11, 12. And having played in the garden with my little boy, my knee swells up. That's how bad it is. And I can't walk for a week. So that's the level I'm at. I can't play any kind of local football with my mates, nothing like that, because my knees just can't handle it anymore.
I like to say, you're chasing me around, but I'm pretty sure that wasn't the case. But, you know, it looked like you had a lot of fun that day, and all the ex-players that are playing those games, it seems like they enjoy that kind of interaction and getting along with their mates again, you know, on the pitch, even if it's in a little supporter charity match.
I'm sure we won that game. I definitely scored. I remember scoring and celebrating like I'd scored in front of the cup again. Yeah, but Jan Mulby was playing. I think Gary McAllister was playing. Yeah. So I'm playing with players again like that and thinking, wow, every time I make a run, they can pick you out with that pass, even though they are obviously retired players themselves.
Yeah, I don't think Jan actually ran. He just got the ball and passed it. But, you know, it was fun. Hey, just talking about, you know, now let's go through your Liverpool career. You've scored a couple goals that are going to be in the history of the club that people always, you know, go back to. And when they look on YouTube and they see the goals that you scored, you know, take us through some of your highlights of your career.
Yeah, I suppose for me, I'm sat here talking to you guys today, and I'd love to be one of the greats saying, oh, I've played 400 games, 500 games, I've done this, I've done that, I've won that. I haven't, but I can call myself an ex-Liverpool player where I've had a couple of moments, a couple of memories, which even, what is it now, 15 years on, some fans still remember those moments, which is great to me. It's great to hear the stories where they were watching the game, if they were at Anfield or maybe a different part of the world. So for me, the two big moments were the goal I scored against Arsenal back in 2004. And it was a significant goal because it was something that I think every boy wants to dream of doing when they're older. Score a winning goal in the last minute in front of the cop against the best team. And Arsenal, I know Arsenal are bang average now, but that Arsenal team was the Invincibles, wasn't it? I mean, there's some great players on the pitch that day. And it felt like a big moment, just not just for me, but also the football club as well, to beat a top side like Arsenal that day. And then Olympiacos soon after that one, because it was, for me, we talk about the great European nights at Liverpool, and that's added to the list, but it's only significant and more memorable because of what we went on to achieve that year. You know, I can see Daz behind. Daz, he's got the picture of Istanbul when we won it five times. I mean, what a night that was. But Istanbul was on the journey to what was an unbelievable year.
Yeah, it's crazy to think, you know, because you like Steve said, you know, you'll watch the highlights on YouTube, but mostly people will watch like the Gerrard, you know, what a hit, son. But yours is a goal poacher's goal, you know, and it got the crowd going. Like the crowd started to believe, you know. I watched it on the telly and I started to believe as well. It's just one of those where you're just like, it's happening. It's happening. Yeah. We're going to do it. And I think that whole run through to the Champions League with that team, I don't think it was the greatest team Liverpool has ever had, you know, but they were together, you know, like they just looked like really good mates. They all bonded. And, you know, that took us to the holy grail of, you know, an amazing cup run. But yeah, your goal and cinemas as well. Like absolutely boss.
Daz, I remember I was fuming at halftime because we're 1-0 down. Rivaldo had scored for Olympiacos. And I spent the whole half time, which was 15 minutes, staring at Rafa Benitez, jogging on the spot, showing him, get me on, because I'm a sub. So I'm thinking, if we can catch his eye line, he's the manager, we need a goal, he's going to put me on. So I spent 15 minutes, like, I'm breathing out of my arse, thinking, get me on that, get me on the pitch. And he turns to cinema upon goal and goes, you're coming on. Yeah. I'm thinking, devastated. So he's put him on, and after 2 minutes he scores. I'm thinking, what a genius Rafa is bringing him on. And then the whole second half I'm warming up by the cop, looking at Rafa, looking at the game, looking at, just get me on. Eventually he did put me on, and when I scored that goal, I wasn't on the pitch too long. I remember thinking, how's Nunes not scored? Nunes had a free header at the back post. He's got to hit the back of the net. The keeper saved it, and then I've just tidied it up with the finish and put it in the back of the net. But the roar, the noise was like, wow, this is it. We can believe that we can go up. We could not have won that game that night without the fans. That's the biggest factor, because the belief, the confidence it gave me, and I'm looking around at the Olympiacos players thinking, they just want the full-time whistle. They want to get out of here now while they still can. And then Stevie's one. I think if you watch the commentary for the game, I think that helps me, because it says a lovely cushioned header from me, which it's funny because when the ball came up, so I'm still I still see it now. What is Jamie Carragher doing on the left wing? So Carragher dinked the ball to me from the left wing. And I've got options as a centre forward. Do I maybe control it? Do I maybe try and flick it on? Or do I lay it off? Now, I've got two options to lay it off to. There's John Arnorisa and there's Steven Gerrard. Now, if I lay it off to John Arnorisa, I know that one in 500 of his shots on his right foot will hit the target. So I'm not going to take that risk of giving it to John Arnorisa, whereas Steve is in a better position. And as we know, the rest is history, because what a goal that was. Brilliant.
Yeah, I don't know if Kerr's ever been up the pitch that high before or since.
Well, actually, his last game of the season, he was high up the pitch when he nearly scored. So, yeah.
Remember,
I mean, being a fan, you know, just going crazy. But being on the pitch that night, like, must have been just, like, out-of-body experience for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the loudest I've ever experienced in the ground as a player. It was like, oh, wow. The only other time that it's been louder for me inside a stadium was when we beat Chelsea in the semi-finals of that Champions League run. I was in the main stand, and honestly, it was just an unbelievable noise and experience to be there as a supporter that night, because I was injured. But going back to Olympiacos, the noise, that's what football's about, creating those memories, creating those moments. And it was amazing to be part of what was a brilliant night for the football club.
You know, Neil, you mentioned Rafa a couple of times, and obviously he still has, you know, ties to Liverpool, and he never ceases to profess his love for the club. Can you share a couple of stories about him? Obviously, he's one of the legendary coaches of our club's history.
He lives down the road from me. Yeah, I can walk to his house. That's how close Rafa lives to me now at the moment. And that's testament to what the football club means to him. You know, he loves the area, he loves the people, and the football club because of his achievements. I remember when I first met Rafa, and he said to me, he got everybody in the room, there's 24 of us in the room at the time, and he said, every one of you have got a part to play this season. And that was the first time I really felt part of the first team squad, because he was telling me that I was going to be involved that season. And he was true to his word. You know, those games against Arsenal, against Olympiacos, he involved me in those games. And after the game against Arsenal, now I've scored the winning goal on a Sunday afternoon, a super Sunday, millions watching around the world. Now, you think about Liverpool's first team manager now, Jurgen Klopp, I'm getting a hug off him. I'm getting a proper long hug if I've scored the winning goal for Liverpool off Jurgen. Rafa, all he did was did in the changing room after the game, I've got the bottle of champers, a little thumbs up. That was it. From the corner, there was no smile. There was not, just a little thumbs up. And that was Rafa's way of saying, you've done all right there. So I was made up with that one.
Are you still walking past his house trying to get noticed?
Do you know what? He's got one of the longest driveways there is in the area, so can't get near it. But now, Rafa's, I've seen him in the coffee shop a few times. His kids have all been in schooling around here. You think he's from Spain, he'd settle back there, but he hasn't. He's settled over here in Merseyside.
Yeah, he's an absolute legend. You know, just the way he is, you know, very tactical compared to, like, you know, different coaches, but he was very tactical and you know how the team played. But no, I mean, it's just gotta be, like, because we talked to quite a few, you know, former Liverpool players, like Steve said, Davy Thompson as well, that he didn't have those memorable goals like you did, and you know, he said he went down some dark times because of you know, the injuries. What about you? Like, you know, when you went with injuries, because it is a very lonely place, and, you know, it does get to you, your mental health wise. So how were you?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, lonely, really lonely. First one in the training ground, last one to go. And the biggest challenge to me mentally was, will I be able to play at the level I know I'm capable of again? Because when I had my first surgery, now I had 7 surgeries in the end on my knees, and the surgeon said to me, you've got an 80% chance of being back the player you were. So I'm like, right, fine, operate, no problem. Mm-hmm. when I was recovering in the operating table, he's come round and gone, you've got a 50% chance. So it's gone down from 80 to 50, which was a tough one to take. So all of a sudden I'm thinking in my mind, will I ever get back to playing for Liverpool Football Club again? So that was a really difficult because when I was playing at Liverpool, I was training, I was accepted and trusted around some of the great Steven Gerrard, Jamie Carragher. They trusted me out there because they knew of what I could add to the game. But the injuries really made it a lot more difficult for me. And it's easy to say it as an excuse, but that was the card I was dealt, and I had to deal with that. But like I say, I talk about my reaction, my response, my belief from those difficult times. It's easy to feel sorry for myself. I can't play football anymore because of my injuries, but I focused on what I could do. And that's something I've always done, focused only on what I can do. Because if I start thinking about what I can't do, that's when I'm going to start feeling down. That's when I'm start going to feel in difficult places. So that's a big belief that I have in my life.
So, you know, do you have any regrets? I mean, because again, you know, you scored two legendary goals, and you know, you put that Liverpool shirt on that, you know, me, Steve, and probably millions of other people would love to do. But yeah, do you have any regrets if you could go back?
Yeah, I mean, we all wish maybe something might have happened. There was moments which I wish might have gone differently, but like I say, I can't change anything. Everything's happened now and I can't change anything. My debut, for instance, I'd love to have said to Elhad's chief, get off that penalty spot now, I'm taking that penalty. Because on my debut, Gerard Houllier, God rest his soul, was the manager, and I'm grateful for him to give me my debut. He said I was on penalties. He said, who wants to take pens? And I've gone, bang, I want pens. Me. It wasn't a great penalty taker, but I thought, yeah, I'll take it. So I've won a penalty in the second half. And whilst I've got mud in my face at the cop ends, Juffy's got the ball under his arm by the penalty spot. And Juffy didn't speak a lot of English at that time. He was struggling to justify his price tag, hadn't scored goals. We spent a lot of money on him. And he was stood there in front of the cop with the ball. And I've gone, Juffy, I'm on pens. Give me the ball. But he's pretending he doesn't understand me. Now I'm on debut in front of the cop and they're thinking, who's this little kid trying to argue with a first team player? So I turned around to Steven Gerrard, who was the captain, and said, Stevie, tell him I'm on pens, but we're losing 1-0 against Ipswich at Anfield. So he said, just let him take it. So maybe if I could have changed something, I would have just grabbed the ball off him, pushed him over and gone, Juffy, get away from me now, I'm taking the pens. But he scored it and we won the game. We actually won the cup that year, 2003, and that was when I scored my first career goal, just over my shoulder there. I don't know if you can see it. That was my header in the semi-final against Sheffield United. So that was my first career goal. And I've got a winner's medal from the 2003 when we beat Man United. What a great cup final. Maybe you've forgotten cup final. We've won that many cup finals. We forget we beat Man U and Gerrard and Owen scored in the game.
Yep.
You know, speaking of cup, let's talk about, you know, one of the best nights in Liverpool history, the Istanbul, right? Can you ever look back at that game and go, how the hell did we beat that team? Because you look at Kaká and Maldini and Pirlo and all the players that they had on that team. And even I, as a, you know, with rose-tinted glasses on, looking at that and go, how the hell did that happen, man? You know?
Do you know what? It's the greatest game I've ever been to. And it's the greatest comeback I've ever witnessed on a football pitch. You know, I talk about resilience in my talk, and the resilience shown by that group of players was unbelievable. I mean, we'd been written off all year in the Champions League, even half-time against Olympiacos, we got no chance. But the next knockout stages, Bayer Leverkusen, top side, no chance. We beat them, Juventus, Chelsea. You know, we were constant underdogs throughout it. And even when we arrived in Istanbul, they were saying, you can't beat this AC Milan team. Because like you say, they had some unbelievable players playing for them. And at halftime, I've got a picture of the scoreboard and I was inside. There were 69,000 fans there. I don't know. There was millions more around the world. And I was looking at the scoreboard thinking, my mates are getting embarrassed, humiliated. And in the biggest game of their careers, I just want it to be the full-time whistle. I want to go home. You know, I'm thinking, this could get worse in the second half. And I remember talking to Chris Kirkland, who stood next to me, a big goalkeeper. And he said, if I could bet, I'd bet us to win on the game. And I'm looking at him thinking, goalkeepers are nutters anyway. You must be crazy to think we're going to win the game. But sure enough, that second half was just unbelievable. And it was a joy to be there. As a Liverpool ex-Liverpool player, as a Liverpool supporter, they were my mates. But, you know, I had breakfast with these boys. I trained with them. I had lunch with them. You know, I spent a lot of time with these boys, and to see them do what they did that night was just unbelievable, and it was great to be part of that night.
Well, the thing is, you watched it like as a fan, right, in the stands,
yeah,
because you'd been injured, so you didn't go with the travel with the squad, right?
Yeah. So the squad, which was 18, match day squad then, last time we won it, I think it was about 40 in the squad. So there's only 18 in the squad that night. And the rest, there's about 10 of us. We travelled on the day from John Lennon Airport. And it was like Anfield, John Lennon Airport. There was flags everywhere, Liverpool fans singing. It was brilliant. So we get to Istanbul. We watch the game. And we're in the stand. We want to get down to the pitch to celebrate with our mates. But the problem is, out of 69,000 fans, there's probably 60,000 Liverpool fans inside the stadium. They all want to get on the pitch. They all want to celebrate with the players. Now, we're in our tracksuits. So we go to a steward, a Turkish steward, say, we want to get on the pitch. We're Liverpool players. And he's gone, no chance. Loads of fans want to get out on the pitch. And he's not going to recognise me. I've only had a couple of moments. No chance. He's not going to recognise Kirkland. But sure enough, we had Fernando Morientes with us. Now, Morientes had won the Champions League a few times. And he says to the steward, I'm Morientes. And he goes, no, you're not. So he has to get his passport out. He gets his passport out because obviously we've travelled that day. We've all got our passports on us. Shows the steward, I'm Fernando Morientes. Next thing, the steward's hugging him, giving him a Klopp hug, thinking his best mates with him. Says, you can come on the pitch. But Fernando Morientes made sure every one of us got on the pitch that weren't obviously playing, injured at the time or not involved. And we were on the podium. So that picture of you in the background, you can see Stevie lifting the trophy. I'm on the podium. I've got confetti going out. I'm celebrating with my mates as we lift that trophy for that moment. But that is thank you to Fernando Morientes for that.
Yeah, it's actually weird because, you know, you look at that and you go, who the hell are some of these people on here? There's a few in tracky tops and you're like, they look suspect. Yeah.
Maybe we got a couple of fans in there as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, you know, I'm surprised you don't have the runners-up medal behind you.
Yeah, do you know what? I've got it in my little boy's got it in his room. I've given it to him because I never got a medal. I played my part along the way, but I never got a medal because it was only the players who played in the game that got the medal that night. And I remember as we left the podium, we had a centre half called Pellegrini. Was it Pellegrini? Pellegrino? Should know his name, but I always get it mixed up whether it's Greeny or anyway. So he was a centre half. We signed him from Spain. He was an Argentinian. I think he was cup tied. That's why he couldn't play. So he was there on the podium as well. And as we walked off to go do the lap of honour with the fans, we looked at the podium and there was two or three runners-up medals that had been left behind. And Pellegrini said to me, do you want one of those? So I said, absolutely, I want one of them. Put it in my pocket. And I've still got it to this day. So I'm expecting a phone call, a text message, whatever it is, from Shevchenko, from Maldini, to say they want that runners-up medal. But they got their own back, didn't they, on us 2 years later, of course, in the Champions League final themselves.
Yeah, that's the one we should have won.
That's a great story, though. I mean, you know, I wish you would have received a winner's medal, but is that something you would do, though? Like, you know, if you lost, because I saw, you know, when we beat Spurs as well, it looked like Harry Kane wanted to toss it into the stands. I mean, is that something you would do? Would you just go... You know,
I've never been a top player like them boys. They're in finals every year, aren't they? So, but it was still a great achievement for them to have got there.
Spurs aren't in finals every year.
No, not Spurs. No, going back to that AC Milan team. But, but I suppose it's some people will see it as a runners-up medal, great achievement to get there. Some will think it's a loser's medal because they haven't won the finals. So I don't know why there was some left there, but I've still got it. So I'm happy to return it if they want it back. No problem.
Well, they can sign it for you and then return it back to you.
Maybe you can get a sit-down interview with Maldini like Kara did, you know, and talk about it.
So here's your medal. Present him with his trophy back, with his medal back.
There you go. Hey, Neil, obviously, you know, you transitioned to the media where a lot of ex-players have done that. You've done, it seemed like it's pretty seamless. You've been able to get over to Sky and LFC TV. Tell us how that's been for you. And was that always something that you wanted to do after playing? I know, you know, some people do the coaching badges, some do the media, and some do both.
Yeah. For me, it was media. When I was still playing, I was doing local radio. I was writing in the match day program at Preston where I finished, and that was the interest that I had. I'd started a media degree as well because that was the route I wanted to go down, the media. It's huge now, isn't it? But back then there wasn't a great deal of interest with the ex-players doing it. So I did Liverpool TV, a lot of youth games, Radio City as well, which is the local radio channel in Liverpool, 96.7, and I really had an interest for it. But to get into Sky Sports was difficult. I pestered and I pestered and I got ignored and I got no, but I didn't give up. And that was the big thing for me, Sky Sports, because, you know, I'm fortunate to work now for Sky Sports, different games that I cover, report at. But it wasn't a case of, can I come and work for Sky? Yeah, no problem. It was a case of, honestly, I must have been ignored 100 times and rejected. But that didn't put me off. And again, it's that persistence, that determination to think, no, that's where I want to get to. And if they want to keep saying no, fine. But when I get that opportunity, I need to take it. So that was the route for me to get to Sky. And I love doing my Liverpool work. You know, like we started the conversation, my dad played for Man City. That was the team I followed growing up. But because of what I experienced at Liverpool, the emotions, the memories, Liverpool's now my football club. You know, they gave me that opportunity to live my dream of being a football player. So I think it was, what was it, 2014, 15, we played Man City in the League Cup final. Mm-hmm. And I invited my dad over to my house. I've got two sofas, me and my little lad on one sofa, the Liverpool scarves on, and my dad with his Man City scarf on the other sofa. So that's how the rivalry is now. And it's accepted because Liverpool is my team. It's my little boy's team. But my dad's team will always be Man City. So this football club means a lot to me. So I'm lucky to work at Liverpool TV as well with a lot of the work I do there.
Dad must have been smiling that day.
It was on penalties, wasn't it? Yeah. Do you know what? My boy must have been 5 or 6. He didn't talk to his granddad for about an hour, 2 hours after the game. He was fuming.
Hey, do you find it difficult to, when you're working for Sky, to not have that Liverpool bias? And then, you know, when going back to Liverpool TV, then you can kind of show it more. Do you feel like, is that difficult to do that?
I think for me, I'm fortunate. I don't cover a lot of Liverpool games at Sky, so it's not. Whereas Jamie Carragher does a lot of the Liverpool game. I'm more sort of Championship level, which is still a very good level. But so the bias isn't really seen or noticed. Whereas at Liverpool, I can be as biased as anything. So that is not a penalty. That is a penalty. VAR's had a nightmare, and so I enjoy that side of it.
We prefer the bias.
I prefer the bias, yeah. Or being honest, I call it honest rather than bias.
That's right.
Yeah, what's your take on VAR? I know everybody has their own opinion, but, you know, what's your take?
Don't like it. Don't want it in the game. I think we're seeking for perfection, which doesn't exist. I think so many decisions that go to VAR are subjective, and that will always be the case. For me, VAR was brought in for one, maybe two incidents a season that everyone sees and goes, how has the ref missed it? And it's not a subjective call. It's a handball on the line. It is a blatant, blatant decision which everyone can see. And that, for me, was what VAR was all about. Now, I go to Premier League games. Do you know what? We beat Leipzig in the Champions League recently. I did not even celebrate Mane's goal. Mm-hmm. Because I'm thinking he's offside. I thought he might be offside. Now, that's not football to me. That is not the emotion. Mm-hmm. When I scored that winning goal against Arsenal, I'd have been thinking, what's he going to disallow it for? And that emotion of football, that passion, is what it is to me. Now, I watch outside of the Premier League Championship in England. There's no VAR. I go to a football match and I can enjoy it because I know whatever decision is given, is given. And yes, there will be mistakes, but honest mistakes from referees. Every referee makes mistakes, but for some reason the Premier League was searching for perfection. It does not exist. And for me, don't like VAR. Yes, there'll be decisions that go against us, go for us in a season. I get that. But the sooner we get the real emotion back into the game, that is the game I grew up loving, and that's what I want back.
Yeah, I think it's lost its heart and soul. Because you don't know if you've scored that goal, and the fans have to wait, the players have to wait. That then, you know, it's gone, it's fizzled out. So, you know, 2-3 minutes later, once you know it's a goal, you're just kind of like, hey, great.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem it's not a coincidence that the level of refereeing in the Premier League has really decreased since the VAR became implemented. It's just like, they have adjudicated the games differently. They're not taking ownership of the game. They're not managing the game as well as they used to. And now they're just, you know, kind of waiting for something else to happen. It is, and like you said, it just ruins the spirit of the game, the passion. And, you know, at first I wanted things to be right, but I've seen the error in my way. So I'm like, it's time for you to go.
Yeah, even the offsides, drawing lines. It's like, come on, drawing lines. And what was it? Firmino's goal at Aston Villa disallowed for an armpit. Mm-hmm. It's like, are you being serious?
Mane's goal against Everton as well.
Mm-hmm. Ugh,
yeah. You know, and many others. I mean, I think if VAR is going to keep going, I think you actually should start listening to what the referee is saying to Stockley Park, where everybody can hear it. You know, well, I mean, like the commentators and stuff, because some of the decisions, I'm just like, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's the delay. It's the delay. It's a subjectiveness. It's like, well, it's not a blatant error, is it? It's not a blatant thing that everyone says. 100%, that is the decision. We'll all think penalty or no penalty. And that's subjective. You accept that some you're going to get, some you're not.
And I think, you know, players kind of know that. And they're going to go down in the box just to see if they can get that decision. You know, we can go.
And the reason is because the TV doesn't tell you how much force there is, how much contact there is. So you can see a little bit of contact and you can go down and go, well, there you go, there's contact.
Mm-hmm.
And you can deal with it, VAR. So if I'm a striker, I'm going to go down a lot more because I'm going to say to the officials, well, make your mind up there because there's a contact there.
Mm-hmm.
And more chance of getting a pen.
Yeah, because I know we all remember Robertson on Welbeck.
Oh, Brighton, yeah.
You know, one week it goes against us, then we watch another game, I remember, and it was pretty much the same contact and no penalty. Yeah. So,
but those decisions will always happen subjectively, and that's something we've always accepted. But because VAR is throwing the delay in, that's why we're not accepting it, because we're saying that, hang on, you know, we can make a strong enough case to say that's not a penalty.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're going to keep on using it, but it's just got to, I think they've got to give the referee a bit more, you know, decision making, instead of somebody, as we all say, in a van down by the river. You know, it's just weird to me, you know, because they're obviously not anywhere near the stadium and they're making these decisions.
I would happily see it gone personally, but that's me.
Nah,
well, you know, in the old days, you know, someone take a dive on you and ask for a penalty, you could take it. You could take care of the business on the field. You know, you go get him next time he gets the ball. You know, you've kind of adjudicated yourself among the players. But now they're like, hey, look at I got a penalty because they overturned it. Or it's like, you know, you can't really even legislate that among the players anymore. And that's kind of part of the game that's is kind of lost too now.
Yeah, not enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. Like, get off.
So I'm going to do a bit of trivia question for it's going to be mostly for the listeners, but you know, I've heard one of your favorite songs is Lady in Red.
Yeah, do you know what? We're laughing at a great song, and Krista Burr actually sung it at one of our Christmas dinners. So, yeah. Sort of back when I think Gerard Houllier was in charge, we'd have an annual Christmas dinner, and Krista Burr came and sung. It was absolutely brilliant. So I'm having a bit of that. And yeah, Krista Burr, Lady in Red.
Yeah, that was my first concert I ever saw in Berlin when I was living in Berlin. He came to Berlin, and that was the only song I knew of him. But yeah, it was very popular. So, all right, I got you on that one.
He's a big red, big red.
Well, he's not that tall, but, you know, he's a big red, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Neil, I wanted to, Dazza, go ahead.
No, go on.
No, I was going to say, you know, in the recent years, a lot of the ex-players, you know, they've really gotten involved in being ambassadors of the club, you know, going around to different supporters clubs. Obviously, in Austin, we've had about 10 different ex-players here visit us. And and you see the kind of proliferation of the supporters clubs around the world. What's your take on just how the brand has improved and gotten better over the years since you stopped playing?
Yeah, great to see. Yeah, you know, it's Liverpool Football Club. The name it's global, isn't it? Now, yes, obviously the core of fans will always be in Liverpool, but it's great to see that how much it's grown around the world. Do you know what? Back in 2003, we went on a pre-season tour to Thailand. And I'll always remember, we got off the plane, it must have been whatever, 10 hours, 12 hours long plane journey over there. We got off the plane, and from the bottom step of the aeroplane, we had to get onto a bus because there was thousands of fans crowding round the bottom of the stairs. We couldn't even get on the tarmac because there was that many fans there to greet us. I was like, wow, this is unbelievable. We got to the hotel and there was like three tiers around the reception of gallery and thousands of fans there to greet us. It was just unbelievable how fanatical, how much interest, how much passion there was for the football club over there in the Far East. And it's great to see the different supporter clubs around the world. I've been to one myself in Vancouver, and like you guys, you're getting up really early to talk to me, which you know is great, and I appreciate that. But I think about the times the fans have to get up around the world to watch Liverpool, and the inconvenience it must be for them, the families. Well, but because of that love, that passion for Liverpool, it's great to see.
Yeah, as long as you just have to have your refrigerator stocked with some pints, and then it doesn't matter what time it is. Does so, it?
I wanted to ask you, you know, what would you like your legacy to be, you know, at Liverpool, you know, in 20, 30 years' time when, you know, you're old and you're banging on about when you used to play for Liverpool to your grandkids and all that.
do you know what? I will look at Liverpool as the football club that enabled me to live my dream of being a football player. They gave me that chance. You know, millions of kids around the world, they want to be a football player. And I was lucky enough to get to experience that. I can't call myself a legend because of the games I played, but I had moments where people remember. So it's nice that they can tell me, like I say, they've been, wherever they've watched that game, whatever it's meant to them, whether they've watched it in a bar with, I don't know, a Spurs fan and they've been jumping up and down or whatever. So it's nice that Liverpool Football Club enabled me to live my dream. And for that, I will always be eternally grateful and support the club.
I'm brilliant.
How honored were you when you were included in the 100 players who shook the cop? Were you surprised at that?
Yeah. But because of the great players that have played for the football club, you know, I can see in the background there, St. John, Ian St. John, what a great fella he was. Never got to watch him play. We've seen videos, of course, of when he played, but what a great striker. So many great strikers have played for Liverpool, and so many more will, you know, because we can attract the top international players. So that was a nice moment. And I suppose that probably sums it up nicely for me, that I got a moment to shake the cop. I got to give the fans a real yes moment and say, enjoyed that. You know, thankfully no VAR. So there was no VAR to put doubt in anyone's mind that it might be disallowed. But I got to give the people that stayed inside Anfield for that last minute winning goal and the fans around the world that yes moment, which is nice to look back on.
Hard it is. You know, as every Liverpool fan, you know, we always like to reminisce and look back at YouTube. I know I do with the Barca match, and I also do with the Olympiacos, because it's embedded in us now, you know. if we're going through a rough patch, you just get on YouTube and it makes you happy.
That Barcelona game, I couldn't get a ticket. It was difficult to get a ticket at Anfield. Watched it in the kitchen with my little boy, thinking, it'd be nice if we could beat these. Then also 1-0 at half time, no Salah, no Firmino. You're thinking, got a chance. And then what happened that second half? I mean, jumping around the kitchen, just brilliant.
Did that, you find parallels between that one and the Istanbul, just the passion of the game?
Istanbul for me can't be beaten because of like we said, that AC Milan team were unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It was the final 3-0 down at halftime. Who comes back from that? It was just unbelievable. But Barcelona one was certainly one of my favourites at Anfield. Like I said, I wasn't there, so I never got to experience the noise inside Anfield. Mm-hmm. I was there for the Chelsea, which was unbelievable. But yeah, Barcelona would be one of those games we look back and I go, wow, we did that.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, it was brilliant. Well, Neil, it's been a pleasure to have you on. You know, again, we love bringing people on to tell their story, just so the new fans, you know, that have just started to, you know, come over and, you know, be wanting to be Liverpool fans. You know, they might have been Man City fans or United fans 5 years ago. Now the Liverpool fans, but we want them to, you know, understand the history of this great, great club. And, you know, I think this team, you know, is going to go on to do great things. I think, you know, at the moment, it is a bit soulless without the fans, obviously. You know, Liverpool are a team that really needs the fans behind them. I know everybody else doesn't have fans, but the Liverpool fans just they get this team, they get this squad, they, you know, pretty much like grab the team and pull them towards the goal, and I think that's what we miss the most.
Yeah, it does a connection. It's the connection, and my Olympiacos, the Barcelona game, Istanbul, they don't happen without the Liverpool fans. And the sooner the fans get back in, the sooner we can all enjoy going to those finals again, watching Liverpool, then that connection can be the difference for winning us stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, a quick one. You weren't able to attend the victory parade either, were you? But Istanbul.
Daz, it's been such a good chat and we have to end on a negative. Hey, do we really have to talk about that?
No, it's up to you. Now I feel bad for bringing it up.
Istanbul was unbelievable. Well, you know, I was at home watching the victory parade, crying my eyes out, because I've got all my family on the streets. I've got loads of friends driven to Liverpool, around Liverpool, watching the parade, waiting for me on the parade, but I wasn't on there. And that was something really, really hard to take, that I wasn't there to enjoy that moment with my mates on the bus with the fans. And that was because the 18 who played were involved against AC Milan. They had a different flight to everybody else. We landed at Liverpool before them, but we were waiting for our bags. Can you believe that? We've waited for bags and not gone straight to Melwood. They've gone straight to Melwood. The baggage took about an hour, whatever. The buses are going from Melwood saying, we're going. Rafa's saying, the police are saying, we have to go. We can't keep the fans waiting any longer. We've got to go. And for that reason, totally get it. For that reason. But we missed out. So when we got back to Melwood, no one was there. And the police would not let us get on the bus at any point on the route. It wasn't safe to do so. So I had to drive home and watch it on the telly crying. So that was really hard because the scenes were unbelievable.
Hey, Neil, I want you to remember who brought this up. When we go back to Liverpool and, you know, we have a pint with you, you'll know it's Daz, not me.
Neil won't be having a pint with me.
No, Daz, yeah.
Well, it's basically, you know, how you know, me and Steve are going to come over for the victory parade, you know, and then, you know, the pandemic happened. So I think you know, we felt a bit like that as well. It's just something that, you know, the team deserves and everything. Before we go, any chance of us winning number 7?
there we go. We can finish on a positive, can't we?
Oh, thank God.
It's the draw. I think the draw suits us. You know, Real Madrid, big name, capable, of course, on the day. But, I think if we play to our levels, I think we can beat them. I think we need key players out there to play and be at the levels they can do. You just don't know with the cup competition. We've missed massive players defensively, of course. I think Nat Phillips has come in, done really well. I think Kabak's settling in really well. And that's freed up and given the team more balance. Fabinho in midfield, more freedom for Gini Wijnaldum and less pressure on the front three. You know, our front three are unbelievable, aren't they? But there's a lot of pressure on them to score goals. Jota back fit as well, just eases that pressure as well. So I'm excited what might be number seven this year. And we all know we love Istanbul. Semi-final against Chelsea, we've been there before. Istanbul, we've been there before. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you can have another picture behind you with number seven.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, absolutely brilliant, mate.
Hey, Neil, you know, we appreciate your time today coming on. It was great to see you again. And, you know, we wish you continued success in for your job at Sky and LFC TV. And you have a standing and open invitation to come visit our supporters club at Austin at any time. So
I will look forward to a beer over there with you guys sometime.
Cheers.
Thanks for having me, boys.
Cheers, Neil.
Thanks, Neil.
Brilliant. All right, thank you for that.